Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, double dip tonight, Monday Night Football here at Ellis Island in the front yard.
Busy times.
Cofield and Company on Cove Island Flamingo hosting our Monday Night Football party. Lotus broadcasting all over the city, including Willie Ramirez, who's normally the guy here at Ellis. He's over at Allegiant. R&R 920, our sister station, has all the radio coverage today. So turn us off now if you want wall-to-wall Raider coverage. We'll have a lot on the Raiders game, including in about 15 minutes. We'll go out to the stadium and talk to big fella Adam Hill. Jeff Parles is in from South Point Studios. We got a ton of football to get to. We'll get to the Raiders, like I said, a bunch. But, you know, Monday often is Bad News Monday, Infirmary Monday. And in this case, the NFL's got a ton of breaking news on quarterbacks. We'll look ahead to week three lines. I looked earlier and I was like, what the hell's going on with some of these games? Well, little did I know that so many quarterbacks were dinged up. So we'll get to that inside of 2 minutes. What's going on, first of all?
That's good to be here. It's what a setup here at the front yard at Ellis Island and Cofield. You're right. Boy, what a total difference a week makes with quarterback health. We only had one guy go down in week one, and now we at least tripled that and maybe even quadrupled that heading into week three.
I've never really understood why some NFL teams, if they spend whatever, $45 to $60 million on their quarterback starter, then the backup, it's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Well, yeah, but if he goes down, like, I think the Bengals will be okay with Jake Browning. He's been fine in the past. But there are some situations out there, and we'll examine these situations with the quarterbacks where I don't love all these backups, and to go super cheap on backups or, you know, last-minute signings or grandpa at the backup is risky. So let's start out with the Vikings because, boy, oh, boy, was that an eye-opener. We watched that fourth quarter last week on Monday Night Football, and we're like, all right, you know, Kevin O'Connell's, he's great. McCarthy right of the ship. Looks like he's going to be a pretty solid quarterback. Then he did not play well at all last night on Sunday Night Football. Now he's down 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, ankle injury for JJ. You know, I'll just say this with last night. I think Atlanta's defense was not valued properly by us. Their pass rush is legitimate now.
They certainly drafted for it.
Oh, they drafted
people got on them because they got two edges, and it's like, well, if that's what they need, the last couple years they needed defense.
Well, not only that, they traded up with LA and ended up having to give up that extra first round pick, and it's like, what are we doing here? And you know, in the end, for the Falcons, I thought they played awesome last night. And for McCarthy, look, he's a rookie. We got to treat him like a rookie, and he's looked like a rookie through two starts. Now the big issue, and you mentioned it at the top, if you go cheap on the backups, you can end up with problems. Carson Wentz, the last few times we saw him, is not an NFL quarterback anymore. And now Minnesota, who had as good of a quarterbacking situation going into last year as anyone, now it's a mess, and it's the battle of the backups in Minneapolis because Jake Browning's on the other side with Cincinnati and Minnesota early next week.
Jaden Daniels, now iffy. He's pretty beat up. Back up there in Commieland is Marcus Mariota.
We know Mariota can play in short spurts. He's similar enough to Jaden that you don't have to change your offense that much. So, you know what? If he has to play, you know, that's the Raiders' next opponent. So, could be a break for the Raiders if they don't see Jaden Daniels. But I really have a hard time seeing him missing this week. 10 days between games. I think he'll be out there. But, again, I'm no doctor, so we'll see how it plays out through the week for the Commies.
What we need every Monday, and you're listening to Cofield and Jeff Parles, who's in from South Point Studios, is it's bad enough, and I probably do it 3 times a year. I may do it again today. I did it last Monday. It's bad enough that I'm a Jets fan, and for the most part, I recognize no one here cares about the Jets. I'm not some asshat, and I will take shots at people. I understand national networks. They figure New York plays, so we get a we're fed way too much Jets and Giants stuff. Jeff is also
I am.
He's a Jets fan.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I got it right. And yesterday we'll hit that in the middle of the shows. It was pretty gross, and it got worse because Justin Fields is now in concussion protocol, and the backup there is a guy that, if you listen to Cofield and Company, there's been a lot of conversation about Tyrod Taylor. I won't explain why, but we've talked about Tyrod a lot over the years. But now the Jets are probably in a backup situation.
Well, is there that much of a difference between the two of them? I know Fields was awesome week one, but that sure seems to be the Steeler defense more so than anything. And we know what Tyrod is at this point. He's not going to make mistakes. He's not going to lose you the game. He's not going to win you many games with his talent, but he's not going to lose you games with turnovers like a lot of these backups do.
So we know Brock Purdy is down for somewhere between another week and maybe 4 weeks. Niners season is not over. The other teams we mentioned, the season's not over unless something is updated and it's a lot worse.
Well, the Jets season is over.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. Yesterday was bad. But with the Bengals, Burrow's down for 3 months.
Yeah.
Toe surgery, a serious toe injury. Is their season over?
Well, they're 2-0. So if they had done their usual Bengal nonsense and go out 0-2, yeah, they would be done. But they found a way week one despite averaging less than 3 yards a play. And yesterday, I mean, that was a really bad loss by Jacksonville. Burrow gets injured early in the game. Browning throws 3 interceptions, and you still can't win the game if you're the Jaguars. That's a really bad loss. And for Cincinnati, look, you're playing another backup this weekend. You have a chance. You can go up to Minneapolis and beat Carson Wentz. Now, Minnesota's defense is much better than Cincy's, but we'll see. Browning's no pushover. We've seen him. He was good down the stretch 2 years ago when he came in for Burrow. They pushed for the playoffs at the end of that year. And Browning, even with the 3 interceptions yesterday, was more than good enough to win that game.
They have hope. I think if they run into real trouble where the locker room is tested, and that was my question coming into the season, because of the Hendrickson thing, the nonsense they had with the first-round pick, and I mean the nonsense again from Mike Brown, I could see that team coming unraveled. I also think Zach Taylor is a very weak leader. But right now, like you said, they overcame the bugaboo. They're 2-0, so until they run into trouble, and unless Browning does a reverse course and it's just awful, I think the Bengals are, I'll call them a dog. I'll have to look up the odds over at Boomers, the yes-no odds on make the playoffs. I think the Bengals have a chance, and I wouldn't count on them being devastated without Joe Burrow in the long term. All right, Chargers-Raiders tonight. Good game. And we have a lot to refer, certainly a big rivalry. It's good for the Raiders that they got off to a good start, because I think the most important, one of the most important things tonight is their building will not be invaded by Chargers fans. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there are Raider fans out there who are like, it never is! Well, the last two Chargers-Raiders games I've been to, and my girlfriend, the significant other, as everyone knows her, the SO, she is a Chargers fan. The last two I went to, it was probably 40% Chargers fans. They invaded, because at that point in the season, the Raiders were terrible, mm-hmm. and all the Raiders fans sold their tickets. So it has happened, even though you always say there's no Chargers fans. I'm telling you, they were in the building. I was sitting in an almost all Chargers section downstairs. So that's a big deal. That you're probably going to have like 85, 90% Raider fans, so you actually have a home field advantage for once. Now, here's my gambling issue with the game. Everyone I'm talking to is saying Raiders plus, which makes me nervous as hell. That's not the sportsbook split, but everyone I'm talking to likes the Raiders. So I'm already in
so
contest,
so
I don't have a choice. I guess I can get out. I can't get out in the contest, but give me your reason why you're like, you know what? This seems like kind of a public play, but let's stick with the Raiders.
First off, that home field advantage will be there tonight. Even just dating back, these first week games have been, the Raider fans have been there. The season hasn't been over. Even just dating back to that other Monday night game that opened the season at home when it was still Carr and Gruden against the Ravens in 2021, I was at that game. That was 80% Raider fans. So there will be a legitimate home crowd advantage tonight. But I thought what we saw from the Raider defense was real last week. Now, maybe it's not. New England put it on Miami yesterday. Miami's defense
Drake
is terrible.
May doesn't suck.
He's not terrible. Yeah. Raider defense was great. And, you know, the one thing that the Raiders obviously have struggled with ever since Gruden got run out, they've never had coaching advantages. They never had one last year. Now they have a coaching advantage with their offensive coordinator against 90% of defensive coordinators. Chip is a great play caller, as we know. And even though Graham's been around, Graham has never been the issue with this coaching staff when he's been on past coaching staffs here. The defense has been as good as it can be with limited talent. And my biggest key for the Raiders, really, and this is just a whole year long with them, having Pete Carroll, even though I thought he was over the hill in Seattle, coming in here of all places was perfect, because they needed an adult in the room. They needed a real coach who ran a real program, and Carroll's done that. And we saw that last week. Once the Patriots took the lead in the past last year, it would have blown up on the Raiders. It would have ended up being a game the Raiders lose by 10 points. Instead, they dominated the last quarter and a half and won by double digits. That's something we haven't seen with this Raider team really since 2021.
Two games tonight, Bucks and Texans. That is a 4 o'clock kickoff, and then the back end of the doubleheader, 7 o'clock, with your Las Vegas Raiders taking on the Chargers. Again, that number is -3.5. There's a little lean towards the Chargers. Remember, all the games here at Boomer Sportsbook inside Ellis Island and Casino Valley Verde are dealt at -105. Got drink specials down here. Well, first of all, $5 beers during happy hour. That goes from 4 until 7. $7 on the bites. I'll give you the info on the bites. It's a Mega Monday. They have these giant fishbowl drinks. You get two of those for just $30. And I'm telling you, they're gigantic. There's so many cool things going on at Ellis Island. You want to come down here, watch a game with Jeff and I inside the front yard. Ellis Island for Monday Night Football.
Now back to Cofield and Company to go behind the patch with Adam Hill on ESPN Las Vegas.
Yeah, sometimes like week 14 on, you go behind the patch, it's pretty gnarly. But right now, Raiders looking good, pun intended, behind the patch, you get it? Jeff Parles in for Willie, it's Cofield. I'm here every Monday. I'm here pretty much every day. It's Cofield and Company. And when I say here, did I mean I'm at Ellis Island 7 days a week? I'm also here a lot, too. I was here over the weekend. If you watch some of my videos over at Boomers, Boomers is a big part of bringing you Monday Night Football here at Ellis Island. I opened a new account with Boomers and took advantage of that $250 deposit match, which not many places have that, and it was probably the easiest sign-up I've ever had for a new mobile account, and their mobile account is very good. All right, let's get out to the stadium. Adam Hill is on the road, not very far away. Adam, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing. We just had the big Tom Brady announcement. Threw some passes to Gronk on the field, and now we're getting ready for football.
The announcement is a flag football-related announcement, and there's some work being done with the Saudis.
There sure is, Steve.
So what exactly are they doing?
There'll be a one-day tournament over in Saudi Arabia in Riyadh in March, involving a bunch of current NFL stars, including Saquon Barkley, Max Crosby, Brock Bowers, and Tom Brady is going to play, and he's going to play with Gronk, apparently, and NFL coaches, Kyle Shanahan, Pete Carroll are involved. They're going to be coaching the team, so it should be a heck of an event.
I'm going to put you on the spot, because it's now inevitable. When a Saudi family owns an NFL team, what's the first team they get in with? Like, who would it be? Would it be Jerry? Like, Jerry's like, I don't trust Stevie, so on my way out, I'm going to sell, you know, 30% of the team to the Saudis?
I think for right now, the NFL is not going to allow it, but I think that's what these things are about, right? These are the small incremental steps to get there. So, I mean, I would like to say nobody, but I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I don't either. Okay, injury updates. So, JPJ officially out. Give us the updates on Roberts and, most importantly, Brock Bowers.
Yeah, Landon Roberts is back. He missed most of last week's game, but he's back. He'll play tonight. And then Brock Bowers is a big question mark. I mean, does it seem like talking to Pete Carroll all week, he was trending in the positive direction. Pete Carroll says he's going to try to go. But, you know, talking to Brock Bowers, there certainly wasn't – you'd expect a player to just be like, I'm playing. I'm out there. I'm going to go. It's not how he was. He certainly wasn't being that way this week. So he was being very, you know, very coy about where he was. And I would say even trending toward, you know, pessimistic about if he'd be able to play. But – I would think, you know, we'll see how that plays out.
Adam, just really for me, the whole key tonight is how much of last week was real from the Raiders defense in what they did, just totally shutting down New England in the second half. A totally different quarterback, different coaching staff on a better side for the Chargers. Just what do you think from the Raiders on defense tonight? What do they need to do to slow down Herbert and what was a vaunted passing attack a week ago?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. I think that's the battle, right? Because the Raiders, I think, were set up to play that offense last week. I think they did a pretty good job, and that allowed them to show what they could do well. I think this offense, the way that Justin Herbert and the Chargers played last week, isn't very structured well to go in against the Raiders. I think it's not one that the Raiders match up well with. So I think it'll be very different. Although the Chargers want to run the ball, that's what their identity has been. This year, they look like they're going to pass it, and they're going to take advantage of the weapons that they have. So I think it's a much better challenge for the Raiders defense, and one that we'll really see them tested, because I think the passing game is where they can be exploited.
Do you believe the Chargers are going to be more of a passing team, and is that prompted by the fact that Slater went down before the season?
I think it's a great question, and I think it was matchup based, right? Like, I think that deep down they want to run the ball and they want to be a running team, but you know, when they matched up with the Chiefs, they saw that that's how they could exploit them, and I think that's probably what they see this week. And I think if they continue to pass the ball the way they did, they're probably going to be that kind of a team.
Well, let's also be honest. They got, I don't know, we have to be honest. We're always honest on here. I don't need to qualify it that way. Adam Hill's over at the stadium. They also got really good performances from some receivers who have not been reliable. You and I went back and forth on Quentin Johnston and who he would be. If he plays like that and actually doesn't have drops, then, yeah, they could be a passing team. And Ladd McConkey is very good. I you know, the other one I will say, and I don't know if anyone got on the Raiders and any press conferences or at least asked a critical question. I don't really understand the Amari Cooper thing. When Keenan Allen was out there, and clearly I know Herbert and Allen have a relationship. That is actually part of why, going on and on, that is part of why they could not be a running team, because Keenan Allen is actually like a run game on so many of the passes for Herbert. He's such a good possession receiver.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that, you know, he's a guy that I took in a lot of fantasy leagues, Steve. I just thought he'd be, you know, back home, this offense, that quarterback. He's the ultimate security blanket for Justin Herbert, I think, for sure. And I think people kind of underestimated that and said, well, it's Ladd McConkey and it's all these other younger guys. But, you know, Keenan Allen is a guy that's very confident and very comfortable there. And I think Justin Herbert's comfortable throwing to him. And I think that does make the offense that much better.
Adam, one quick question on the Raider offense, because obviously it was throw heavy a week ago. Genty struggled in his NFL debut, but it feels like in this matchup they're going to need that run attack to get going. What needs to get done? Is it as simple as just better run blocking up front for the rookie?
Yeah, I think for sure. They were really weren't able to clear much at all. We thought the scheme and the experience in the offensive line was going to help. But really, last week, we didn't really see that get going. I think that's going to be a focus today for sure, if for no other reason than to keep the Chargers' offense off the field. So they're going to focus on the run. They're going to try to run. They are missing Jackson Bowers Johnson, of course, mm-hmm. the right guard. But Alex Kappa has been good in the past. I know last year wasn't great, but he's been good. And so as long as that's there. And then it depends on Brock Bowers. Like, I do believe he's playing. I should have been clear about that. Like, he was, you know, coy about it a little bit. But, yeah, I think he's going to go, at least try to. But if he's not at full strength, I mean, that – takes that much away from their passing game anyway. So I expect them to try to focus on the run for sure, but they might have to throw to try to keep up.
You know, it's a little more rare than, say, it used to be. Yes, we have a rivalry here, but we actually have a coaching rivalry. Can you go into the background with Harbaugh and Pete Carroll going, you know, years back, even to college football?
What's your deal? It's one of the great lines ever that has been uttered on a college football sideline. But it's also rare. I mean, two guys that are that competitive and that successful that were in the same college conference and then were in the same division in the NFL and are now in the same division again, like, that on its own is rare enough. But the fact that they've had some individually tough matchups, and look, Pete Carroll was at USC at a time where they were the king, and Jim Harbaugh turned a doormat at Stanford into a competitive team. So I think that's a big part of the rivalry too, but I think they're just ultra competitive guys that have just gone, you know, are so familiar with each other that this is naturally developed.
How did Raider Stadium turn around the fight setup to a NFL football setup this quickly?
Funny, I was actually thinking I should just sleep here from the other day, but I was just on the field. It looks totally different.
Yeah.
It's back to a football stadium. You wouldn't even know that there was boxing here, except for the fact that Turkey Al-Sheik was still here.
Okay. You're usually not a glass overflowing guy, but that fight crowd and the setup and the screens and the sight lines, I think... From what I saw, I wasn't there. You tell me you were there. It was pretty impressive.
It was incredible. I think there's no question. They brought in this giant screen that you could just see everything on it, and then that's just gone. So great job by them to pull it in. I thought logistically it went off really well. I think visually it was great. You know, pacing was terrible, as is every boxing, but Dana White said he'd fix it. It's, you know, can't do it overnight, I guess. So we'll see. But in terms of just how everything looked, I thought it was fantastic.
Did you see the many screenshots and video shots of Dana White watching next to Turkey Al-Sheik, and then what was that, Mr. Beast down the way, and then Jason Statham? Like, what a motley crew sitting there. I think Dana was just concentrating, and I think he was watching TV. The monitor's below, but everyone's like, wow, he looks really miserable.
He did look miserable the entire time. I think. But I mean, like you said, he was sitting next to Jason Statham, looked like he'd been kidnapped.
Yeah.
You know, Turkey Al-Sheik looked happy, and then Marky Mark was on the other side of Dana. I don't even think people even realized that. But
I didn't know.
What a just a, as our good friend Brian Blessing used to say, a hound's breakfast. of people that were just hanging out together.
I don't know if it's applicable, but I like that you used it there, the hound's breakfast. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go back to the beginning of the conversation because I don't think Turkey El Sheikh realized that, like, people are going to react to him. Is there any plans on – this is a Tom Brady deal. I suppose it's kind of an NFL deal. It's Fanatics. Like, they're not going to introduce this guy tonight at the Raiders game, right?
I don't think so. I think they did it far in advance on purpose to clear that out of here before the game started.
That's a very good move. If I'm playing fantasy football tonight, and obviously it's very late in the game, but you know you can play daily fantasy. Give me a guy on one side or the other because you mentioned fantasy and that you drafted Keenan Allen. I assume 81 leagues. You went what 68-13 yesterday. I don't know what your record. I don't even know how you keep track of your record. But is there someone that you expect to have a good offensive game tonight that maybe people don't realize has some value?
A lot of them are best ball, so you don't even have to follow every week. I mean, you just kind of check in on things, so it makes it a little easier. But that's a good question.
Give me a Michael Mayer.
I think Bowers is going, so I don't know about that. And by the way, if he were to be out, Michael Mayer stays in his role. It's Ian Thomas that takes over the Brock Bowers role, so that's not like a one-for-one replacement necessarily. I do think Quentin Johnston continues what he's doing, though. He crushed the Raiders at the end of last year. I think he looked really good. I think he's the guy that's kind of overlooked, has all the talent in the world, but I think he has another big game.
What hands on that guy? That's an old argument. All right, Adam, enjoy the game. I appreciate you carving out a few minutes for Jeff Parles and I on this Monday. We'll talk to you.
Sounds good. Talk to you guys.
There you go. You have any fantasy interest in tonight's game?
I have Cameron Dicker. I'm down 12 points.
So do I.
Yeah. So I need what? I need four field goals and one of them to be long.
Okay. That's an ask.
I
have Herbert. He needs to have slightly above a dreadful game, which I think he'll be okay. But, you never know with injuries. Yeah. You never know pace of game. Certainly if the Raiders take a lead and Ashton Jeanty has a big night, then Herbert's going to have to be whipping the ball over the yard. And we'll get into this as the show moves along. I do have my questions about the Chargers on defense. I thought there were a lot of warts on defense. Everyone came out of it. Everyone gets thrilled because they beat the Chiefs, but there were a lot of issues in that game. We're live here at Ellis Island. First kickoff for Monday Night Football doubleheader is at 4 o'clock. Get on down here. Front Yard right now has $5 drafts, and it's their drafts. They've got their own brew here. And then $7 bites, 4 to 7.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Front Yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
I love Mondays. So much football to get to. I love college football. We're going to hit on it where we can, but the NFL is king. We do have to mention, though, two coaches got fired in the last day or so, which, my lord, VTech moves on from Brent Pry, not Brent Key, who's at Georgia Tech. I always get confused on that one. And Deshaun Foster, who was just here in town a couple weeks ago with UCLA against UNLV, he is fired after three games. And former UNLV linebacker coach in D.C., Tim Skipper, will take over, which I actually think is a good thing. Is firing a guy three games into the season a good thing?
No. It means your team stinks.
Is it a good move by the administration?
You know, for Virginia Tech, I'm stunned that Pry made it to this year. He was as bad of a coach as there was in, forget just Power Four conference football, but if you throw in all the G5, he was as bad as anyone. I'm stunned he got an extra year, and it was every bit as bad as it looked through three games. I mean, Steve, you get blown out by Old Dominion in your own building, and just pathetic all the way around.
By the way, in front of like a full crowd too, so yeah. They're still showing up. And a lot of this is the optics, because if UCLA loses a Big Ten game, I don't think that they blow out Deshaun Foster, but they got beat by a team that was picked bottom three in the Mountain West Conference. That's wrong. New Mexico, obviously, is going to be pretty decent. But New Mexico, I mean, it was one-sided. They were like never – I was watching. I'm like, okay, they're going to make a run here. There's no run.
Well, that was one of those where I in the middle of the first quarter, I rushed to my betting apps and took as much of New Mexico first half as humanly possible. And obviously, I didn't even have to sweat. That was as easy as it gets. I'll say for New Mexico – Ed can coach. We knew he could coach at Idaho, but he can coach. But for UCLA, it must have been so bad in that locker room for them to fire a guy who was an All-American player, an NFL player, and a good one at that, coming out of UCLA and Foster, for him on after 15 games, there must have been something else on top of the bad product on the field at UCLA. And you know what? It's, boy, what a horrible 2.5 years it's been. Chip Kelly leaves for an offensive coordinator job. Granted, it was a darn good one in Ohio State. And now you're firing one of your best recent alums after 15 games. I don't know. Who would want that job right now other than the fact that you're in Los Angeles? There's nothing really that good about that job right now.
They've got challenges from a money standpoint, but it's still a Big Ten job. I would still, I mean, right now it's not looking like a great job. I would still take that over some of the hell holes in America's armpit in the middle of the country. It is in L.A. There's a massive, California is as good as any state for recruiting, so I'm not here to pitch all the positives on UCLA. But they do have money issues. And, you know, the funny thing is, on Deshaun Foster, I was like, well, you kind of get what you pay for. Because I thought they really went bargain basement. I mean, he was making less than almost every Big Ten coach, but he was still making $3 million a year. They still made an investment. I think their whole deal there was for $15 million. It's just the biggest thing for me, and I didn't see the final stats on the penalties. I know they had 14 penalties against UNLV, and they were trending for 14 again. You have back-to-back games with 14 penalties, and a lot of them are motion and procedural stuff. That's just nonsense, and that's a sign that you're poorly coached. The offense doesn't seem to be humming right now. No. Tino Sinceri is going to be there. Skipper's going to be the head coach. So we'll see what UCLA can do the rest of the year. On Eck, he's a funny guy. We fell in love with that dude at Midwest Conference Media Day because, first of all, he's a big fella. So he could walk in here on Cofield & Company and they'd be like, oh, that's another one of the schlubs that does Cofield & Company. You're like, no, he actually played at Wisconsin. He's a pretty good FBS or FCS coach. You know, he's coaching New Mexico. He's a good coach. He's got a good sense of humor. He's really busting chops. He said he jokingly, like, hey, this is payback for UCLA taking Donovan Dent. Remember, that was a big transfer from the Lobos over to UCLA. I did see someone already was like, hire Eck. You can shoot a little higher than Jason Eck. I will see someone who's intriguing, and I, from a character standpoint, I'm not sure I'd want to get in a bed with this guy. But I do think UCLA is going to have to spend money and make a splash. I wonder if they will make an effort to talk to John Gruden.
I thought that for Virginia Tech, actually, because Gruden has already said publicly how much he respects that job during the summer on whatever Barstool show he was doing. But
you recognize what's the better job, VTech or UCLA?
It's close, because now would you rather be in the Big Ten and be at the bottom of the Big Ten, or would you think in the ACC? Again, how long is the ACC going to be around for? Dan Mullen's got to be in the mix for both of these jobs, doesn't he?
Well, remind me later. I asked him about it today at his press conference. And the reason I like Dan Mullen, I think there's a lot of other coaches and maybe school administrators would be like, what are you asking about that for? But he was like, he answered honestly. He said, I like this place. He did say he's not going to be here for 15 years. He's also like 50-something. So,
right.
We'll see, man. He will be on every freaking list because UNLV is paying him. But some of these schools can pay so much freaking money. That said, I don't know that UCLA can, you know, go in the $5-7 million range for a head coach. More on that coming up. Ellis Allen, we roll on the Front Yard, Monday Night Football. First game's going to kick off here in about 25 minutes. We'll get back to the fight and a lot of college football. Big win for his Cane. Steve Kim is up.
Steve Kim, the host of the 3 Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield & Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
All right, Buccaneers fans, yes, there are some, are filing in to the Front Yard. One of our show buddies, Billy, just showed up with his Buck stuff on. Continuing to get you ready for a doubleheader in Monday Night Football. But let's go back to a little boxing and then get some college football in here with Steve Kim from Fearless. Steve Kim 323 up on Twitter. What's up, Steve?
Gentlemen, good Monday to you.
Tell me how you scored the fight.
116-112 Crawford, and I almost felt like I was being very generous with Canelo, and the fact that Crawford had to win 11-12 to win the fight and really win the 12th to South to avoid a draw. I'm not so sure it's quite as bad as this, what almost happened with Dimitri Bivol and Canelo, but that to me is very, I don't want to say it marred the night, but it really reconfirmed this old saying that I was taught by a boxing veteran years ago: fighters fight for today, judges judge for tomorrow.
I thought probably against the grain of a lot of people watching the fight, I thought that Skipper Kelp on the broadcast actually did a really good job of scoring the fight.
Skipper did a fine job. Yeah. He really did. And, you know, some would say that he was a little bit too wide. I don't know. I thought my 8-4 could have easily been 9-3 for Terrence Crawford. I know people that had a 10-2. Ooh. So, you know, I think Skipper, for the most part, was on his A game, did a very good job there. And Terrence Crawford really showed his class. And I thought one of the big factors, I thought there were two big factors, guys. Number one, Crawford is an absolute pathological competitor. He was never going to allow himself just to be grateful to get the fight. He was going to compete to win and play to win the game, unlike Canelo's last few opponents. I thought that was a fact. Other thing was, I remember watching the Williams Skull fight, and halfway through, I said to myself, Crawford can beat him. He can beat that version of Canelo. But I do give Crawford credit, though. He didn't win just by boxing, Steve. I thought the last three, four rounds, yeah, he went right into the belly of the beast with the bigger man, and I thought he won those exchanges.
I mean, I thought it was not a particularly close fight, in all honesty. I really thought Crawford would, I had Crawford 10-2. I mean, I thought it was that big of a domination. But, Steve, just now, I know we got to ask the legacy question now. Just what does this do for Bud Crawford if it is the end? Where do you look at him all-time boxing-wise after, again, completing an undefeated career?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. I wrote about this in my column for Snack today, Omaha, shout out to Peyton Manning, that he is certainly an all-time great. Now, the question is, how high do you have him? He'll probably be dinged for only having 42 fights, but what's in his favor is he's a five-division world champion, undisputed in three. That is almost unparalleled, especially the past 30 years in the era of the fractured belts and guys avoiding each other. The only thing that's really ever stopped him is the politics of the business. I believe he's top 20. Some people probably have him even higher. I really do think post-Mayweather-Pacquiao, he has become the defining boxer of this particular era. So at this point, we could be splitting hairs in terms of ranking him. Is he the 11th best? Is he the 7th best? Is he number 23? But let's just put it this way. He's not in the top 1% of anyone that's ever boxed. He's probably in the top 0.1%.
Canelo upset. Mild upset. You know, Canelo went off at 170-180, but upset by Terrence Crawford all the way up at 168 pounds. Steve Kim, boxing expert, is in. Of course, Steve has his Three Knockdown Rule podcast with Mario Lopez. Can you pull back the curtain on Crawford? What am I missing that he would walk away when he's now on the verge of actually making real money for another two or three fights?
Well, he's made real money, but has he made the consistent eight figures? And I don't know if he was making nine figures, but he intimated pretty clearly at the post-fight press conference that he had some thoughts of moving back down to 160 and getting another set of belts. Because remember, he went from 54 to 68. He went from junior middleweight to super middleweight. There's some guys at 160 that I believe would come relatively cheap and would help his legacy. Like Janabek is a unified belt holder, although he's with Top Rank. I'm not so sure if that would muddy the picture. But Turkey's money has a way of bringing people together. There's Arislan de Lara and Carlos Adames, who are with the PBC. They are now working with Turkey Alosheik. So there's some interesting possibilities, but given the statements that Terrence made on Saturday night, I do not believe he's walking off into the sunset.
Do you think there's any shot there's a Canelo Crawford 2 and it's here?
Well, you know, I saw something on Twitter. I guess Bill Simmons said that there's a rematch clause. They might do it again. Guys, be honest. I thought it was a very intriguing fight. It was entertaining for when it happened live without knowing the result. But did you guys... Seriously, did you guys walk away thinking, God, I need to see that again?
I would like to see a better version of Canelo. That's my other question for you. Was that Crawford perplexing him, or has Canelo slowed down and he just couldn't get off?
Well, I think both can be true, but keep this in mind. Even though, and I brought this up a lot in the lead up to this fight, Terrence Crawford's about 3 years older, but he also has only about 45%. I mean, we're talking about a guy in Canelo that is very close to 70 fights, and Crawford just has 42 now. So the boxing odometer is not always based on age. It's really about rounds and the grind. And Canelo has been a pro since age 15. I have sensed physical slippage the last couple of fights. I don't think what happened against Skull was just really an indictment of the way Skull ran around the ring, which he did. But if you look at Canelo, I think there's a particular reason why he had been matchmaking his own fights the way he had the last few years. And the only reason why the Canelo fight with Crawford took place is because Turki Alashik, I think he talked Canelo into taking all that money.
Steve, were you surprised by the crowd's reaction to Turki Alashik?
Now, I wasn't there. What was the reaction to him?
I would say half the crowd booed. It was pretty loud. It was a slow beginning, and then people were like, Saudi? Boo! Wow.
At the end of the day, they hate the guy so much, they came to his event, an event that would not happen without him.
Well, he
so
may have just
booed him.
Yeah, keep going.
I think if you booed him, you ought to be a little bit more grateful. I mean, if you enjoyed that fight, if you're a Terrence Crawford fan and enjoyed what happened, I don't know. You don't have to agree with his politics, socially, culturally. But if you feel that strongly about the guy, don't support the event.
Steve Kim is with us. I don't know if you saw the announcement, but Tom Brady is working with Fanatics and a bunch of ex-players, and they're working on a flag football thing for next March. They're actually going to do it in Riyadh, so maybe Turki Alashik just paved the way for the NFL to start getting involved with the Saudis.
Yeah, I think that's the fear a lot of people have, is this going to become like where LIV Golf is not something unusual. But again, I don't know what to say. I'm just a guy that watches games on a couch and enjoys it for the entertainment value. The geopolitical ramifications of all this, I really don't care. I mean, one day there might be a Super Bowl over there. But you know what? It really won't impact me for one reason, guys. I have no need to ever go to a Super Bowl, believe it or not. It'd still just be a television event to me.
You are a Canes fan. You're a Canes follower. You're very good on college football. Steve Kim is with us. That was a hell of a win for the Canes. Dominant. How'd they do it?
Well, they overcame the rain. There was like four or five major games at one time, Steve, that were impacted by the weather, and they all just kind of stopped. USC-Purdue, you literally could have played a whole football game in between that rain delay. Guys, I'm just telling you, and Steve, I think I've intimated this to you. This year's Miami team is actually a better all-around team than the very exciting, entertaining one that was led by Cam Ward. Defensively, they are markedly better with their new defensive coordinator. They went heavy into the portal, specifically at the defensive back spot. And, you know, what's kind of scaring me, and I am going to the Florida game this week, Florida's actually a tough out, guys. I would not look at their record. They actually probably outplayed LSU, except for INT Lagway kept throwing the ball to the LSU Tigers. So that's going to be a very tricky game this Saturday at Hard Rock. But if Miami cannot make the playoffs with this particular team and they stay relatively healthy, it just may not ever happen for Mario Cristobal.
Steve, you buying stock in Carson Beck for the Heisman Trophy?
Well, I'm buying stock in him being one of the four or five best quarterbacks in the country. I thought the narrative on him was very unfair, and maybe that had to do with his past relationships and the way it ended up. But if you actually look at his numbers last year, over 3,400 yards passing, 28 touchdowns with maybe the worst group of receivers in terms of number of drops and a below-average offensive line, I actually thought he did pretty well. But I think the expectations were so high that it was looked upon as a letdown injury. The injury was a factor, but the way he is currently playing right now, I think him and John Mathieu are the prime candidates to be at least finalists in New York the first week or two of December.
Beck's looked great. Jeff, I want you to build on your comment about misjudging a lot of the quarterbacks and get Steve's reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to give Brandon Walker, Barstool, a shout because he was the first one to mention and it got my brain churning that. Steve, going into the year, we thought, all right, it's Cade Klubnik and Arch Manning and DJ Lagway and Garrett Nussmeier. Nussmeier may be dealing with some injuries, but three of those four names I've just mentioned have been below average so far this year. Arch Manning and Lagway have both stunk it up. And you just mentioned it, Steve. Carson Beck and John Mathieu, you got to Mathieu on your own. They're the two betting favorites in most sports books across the country right now in the Heisman Trophy race.
Yeah, they are. And Mathieu had an advantage because John Arbuckle, his offensive coordinator, came with him from Wazoo. I think that's an overlooked factor. Mm-hmm. And Carson Beck is really, I think benefiting from a new scenery. A lot of the things that were in his personal life last year or last season are no longer around. Guys, I think this is a story to keep monitoring, and I've been hammering it. You know this, Steve. The Arch Manning hype may be something that's going to be a 30-for-30 documentary in about 15 years. I have never seen a player so unproven. Think about it, guys. Three, four weeks ago, he was literally on mock drafts as the number one pick and the Heisman front runner. He was literally in like these top 10 college players coming to 25. Guys like Joel Klatt, who I respect, had him number three. I have never seen a more overhyped player in the history of my life as a college football fan.
SEC. I mean, it's all part of the hype machine. There are a lot of good quarterbacks around the country. By the way, I'm not giving up on Arch Manning, but he hasn't been very good. I got to get your point on, or get a point from you on the Chiefs. It's not a great start. They played two good teams. It wasn't like they were blown off the field. People are starting to make a big deal of Travis Kelce's move to wear a free Rashi Rice t-shirt, which I am kind of confused about. Is he suffering some injustice that we don't know about?
Look, Rashi Rice, what he did has killed people. He put other people at danger. And this was a problem I have with a lot of athletes who believe that they have a platform that everyone has to listen to. This is actually why we shouldn't listen to athletes. They're tone deaf in a lot of ways, and I think they're also very, very delusional. And I just don't get it, but I also have a theory. Who you martyr or who you stick up for or who you worship, there's a lot about you as an individual. And you can be a good teammate without wearing that shirt, because in the age of social media, now I didn't even see the shirt till this morning, and I'm just telling you, it is absolutely tone deaf to make him into some sort of martyr.
This is not enough time to do justice for Ricky Hatton, but I was very saddened to see Ricky Hatton pass away. Very young, super connected to Vegas for his mega fights here.
He's the guy that bridged the gap between the UK and the British boxing scene in America. When I first came into the business, it was basically a divided business, but because of his star power and his popularity, he was involved in some major events. Now, he didn't win those fights against Pacquiao and Mayweather, but he certainly created some great events, and his fans, which were rabid, created some unbelievable atmosphere, Steve. It truly was a different time and place in boxing.
Steve, great spot as always. Snack Nutrition brings us Steve Kim's spot. Make sure you listen to the 3 Knockdown Rule podcast. We'll see you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Steve Kim, up on the web at, well, Twitter. Steve Kim 323. We got to build on the Chiefs thing. This is what happens when you start losing and you are a team that's expected to win 14, 15 games. We start nitpicking, but I got to tell you, I don't get it. I think he's smarter than that. Here's the thing. Free Rashi Rice t-shirts. It wasn't just Travis Kelce that was wearing it. It was multiple teammates.
Oh,
Andy
yeah.
Reid, the owners. What are you doing?